Friends in Idaho is a podcast following the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Kayla Waters, in correlation with my other podcast, True Crime Exposed. I have followed this case closely as it all came to an end here in Idaho, just 30 minutes north of where I grew up and currently live. I will be attending most days of Lori Daybell's trial at the Madison County Courthouse in Rexburg, Idaho. This is the area which the crimes took place, and this is the only location outside of Ada County that has access to the live stream of this trial. Each day, I will recap the trial for you here. Welcome to It Ends in Idaho, the Lori Daybell Trial. On Thursday, April 13th, 2023, we're back in court for the fourth day of witness testimony. And the witness that the state is bringing to the stand first is one that will likely ring a bell with you if you've been with this case from the start. It is Melanie Gibb, Lori's longtime friend. You've already heard me mention her name multiple times throughout our first three episodes, and that's because Lori told the Rexburg police that Melanie Gibb was the one who had her son, JJ. By 8:40 a.m., the jurors are led into the courtroom, and the prosecution will start their direct examination. Melanie Gibb testifies that it was not Lori who she was first friends with. In fact, she met Chad Daybell 1 to 2 years earlier. She meets Lori at a church event in 2018. After testifying that she met Lori's two youngest children early on in their friendship, she notes that Tylee and Lori seem to have a strained relationship, saying that Tylee was always upset with Lori. While she initially thought Lori was a doting mom to JJ who sang him songs and paid a lot of attention to him, eventually she became too distracted to pay him the attention he needed. Melanie and Lori saw each other often in their friendship, at least a couple times a week, but that all changed in January of 2019 when Lori Vallow starts moving around a lot. In the early days of their friendship, Melanie and Lori only lived 25 minutes away from each other. They would often speak on the phone and send each other text messages. But like I said, by January of 2019, Lori decides to move. Melanie testifies that she first goes and moves in with her brother Alex Cox. After that, she heads to Hawaii for a little while. It's about January to July of 2019 that Lori is very back and forth. Sometimes she's in Arizona, sometimes she's in Texas. She is not having a good relationship with Charles at this point. This is during the time where they're separating, getting back together, and separating again. This is when the prosecution jumps back in time, asking Melanie about October of 2018. Melanie Gibb testifies that during this month, she goes with 5 to 6 other women to a conference in St. George, Utah. This is a weekend conference, so her, Lori, and their friends are there from Friday until Sunday. And guess who else is there? Chad Daybell. This is where Chad and Lori meet. Melanie testifies that Chad was only there on Friday and Saturday, but she was able to observe Chad and Lori's first meeting. She testifies that there was a clear attraction right from the beginning, saying she was very interested in him, like someone would when they're attracted to someone. She goes on to say that Lori was flattered by Chad, enticed by Chad, and flirty with Chad. Now the prosecution asks Melanie if Lori read any of Chad's books prior to meeting him, and she testifies just a few. They ask, so you saw them speaking and they had shared interest? Melanie says yes, their shared interest is religion. Right after meeting Chad, Lori is telling Melanie that they were married in multiple lives. This is what Chad had told her. But the defense objects to this, citing hearsay. The state says this is a statement of a co-conspirator. Melanie says, quote, she had already had the belief system of these multiple lives, as they would call it. She already believed that before she physically met him. Lori had already told Melanie that in a previous life, she had been married to the prophet Moroni, who is in the Book of Mormon. Melanie goes on to testify that she knew Lori was staying in contact with Chad Daybell following this conference. She's asked, "Did you know if Lori was married when they first met?" And Melanie says, "Yes," to Charles Vallow. "What about Chad? Was he married?" And Melanie testifies yes to Tammy Daybell. Then prosecutor Lindsay Blake asks, "Do you know if their spouses were still alive?" And Melanie testifies, "They were." She goes on to testify about the multiple probations and how she had learned from Lori about this first. But once Lori and Chad get serious, he starts to talk about this a lot more often. Now Melanie testifies that just 2 weeks after first meeting in October of 2018, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow are meeting up again, and Melanie was at the event they met up at. She's asked by the prosecution if there was a little get-together held separate from the actual event at the conference center, and Melanie says yes, it was a little meeting at Lori's house before the conference. Now the prosecution asks, "Did you observe Lori and Chad together during that?" But Melanie says, "I don't remember him there." So then the prosecution moves on to ask, "Did you observe them together during that weekend?" And Melanie testifies, "Yes." She also goes on to say that she knows Chad Daybell stayed at Lori Vallow's house there in Arizona. So the prosecution asks, "Was Charles present?" And Melanie testifies that she believes he was out of town. And then they ask, just to clarify, were they both still married to their spouses? And she says yes. Now, as Chad and Lori's relationship quickly progresses, Lori starts telling Melanie all about it. She says that her and Chad were married 4 or 5 times before this in different lives. She even goes into detail about what different characters they had been in those previous lives. And then she tells Melanie one time that her and Chad met up in the temple together. This is not something you would do if you were practicing the Mormon faith. You would not be meeting up with the person you're having an affair with. But Lori tells Melanie that since her and Chad had been married in multiple lives, this was somehow a reuniting, and they were able to marry each other again in the temple, but in secret. No one officiated it, it was not in a sealing room. The prosecution wants Melanie to explain the norm for these proceedings, so she's asked about regular sealings in the temple, and Melanie says, "Our church teaches you get sealed to your spouse for time and all eternity. These marriages in the temple are scheduled. You do have to have a marriage license, and someone in the temple does officiate it." But because of Chad and Lori's multiple lives and how high up they claim to be spiritually, apparently they can get away with going around the rules. Melanie testifies that Lori was very open with her about the relationship between herself and Chad Daybell. She says that they love each other and that they have a special mission. This mission was to gather the 144,000. They felt like these were the people to be saved up in Rexburg, Idaho. Melanie testifies that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow felt like they were the head of this mission, and with this mission comes power. Melanie testifies that as soon as she met Lori, Lori had already believed she was a part of this 144,000. It's weeks after meeting Chad that she now believes she's the head of it. So Lindsay Blake asks Melanie if she can recall Lori telling her about the light and dark scale. Melanie says yes. Lori had told her that people were either light or they were dark. People that were light were a part of the kingdom before the premortal light, and that they had signed a contract with God. Those that were on earth and were dark had previously signed a contract with Satan. Melanie testifies that Lori started teaching these things after she met Chad Daybell, and she taught them to many others. Lori would teach some of her girlfriends, like the women who went to that conference with her in St. George. She would teach her brother Alex Cox and other friends that she did a podcast with. Now the prosecution asks Melanie if Lori's teachings ever evolved over time, and she testifies yes. The prosecution wants to know if Melanie Boudreau was part of this circle, but Melanie Gibb testifies, no, we did not share their beliefs. And then she's asked, do you recall Brandon being at any of those meetings? And she says she does not. She's also asked if she ever talked to Brandon about the meetings, but Melanie Gibb says not while she was friends with Lori. And then she testifies that Charles was never at those meetings either. And she's asked if Lori considered her husband Charles Vallow as part of her inner circle. Melanie testifies no. Lori said Chad Daybell had let her know Charles Vallow was taken over by an evil spirit. So according to Lori and Chad, this made Charles dark. And then the prosecution asks, did Lori talk to you about a dream she had? And Melanie says yes. Lori claimed to have had a dream where Charles and JJ got in a car accident. He died, so he would not be coming home by January 1st. He, meaning Charles. In this dream, Lori said that Charles had died during this car accident. And Lori thought this dream was more of a vision, something that would be happening. So she told Melanie that Charles was not coming home by January 1st, 2019. So the prosecution asks, was JJ with Charles at that time? And Melanie testifies yes. She's asked then if JJ would have been traveling back with Charles when he is supposed to get in this car accident. And Melanie says he was. But this accident never happened. Since the car accident never happens and Charles is still alive by January 1st, 2019, Melanie testifies that she did ask Lori about this, and Lori said they had a plan. Lori would often talk about Revelation and all the experiences she was having with Chad. They just knew Charles was a dark spirit, and they believed that it was revealed to both of them that their spouses would pass away, with the idea that once their spouses pass away, they could be together. Now the prosecution asks Melanie about the castings. She says that Lori was trying to figure out how to remove these evil spirits that had gotten into people. They would attempt to do this with prayer or reading from the scriptures, and they would encourage the spirit to come out by the power of God. Melanie is asked, did you observe any of these castings? And she says yes, both in January and February of 2019. Charles Vallow was the first dark spirit she had ever heard of from Lori and Chad. So the first castings were all done towards Charles, and these were held at Zulema's house. So Melanie is asked by the prosecution who was there, and she testifies, Lori, Zulema, Christina, Nicole, Serena, and me. And then she's asked if castings are a type of prayer. Are there any other elements? And she said, I guess so. She says the terminology they would use sounded like energy work. They would try to share words like connecting your spirit to your body. Melanie testifies, I didn't use those words. I just talked about my relationship with Christ. But it was their attempt to help convince the spirit to leave the body. One thing you'll notice through Melanie's testimony is that she very much tries to distance herself from this whole situation. I'm not sure how I feel about that. Melanie is asked if the spirit they're trying to convince to leave the body was a spirit that had come into the body or the person's actual spirit. And Melanie testifies that it's the spirit that had taken over the body. And then she's asked, where did Lori say the original spirit of the body was? According to Lori, the original spirit was stuck somewhere in a spirit world. It couldn't move on without its body being put to rest. Now the prosecution asks what happened to the body once a dark spirit was cast out. Melanie says the first time that Chad and Lori thought Ned was cast out of Charles, Charles's body was still alive, so they didn't really know what happened now. She's then asked if Lori was present for all of the castings, and Melanie testifies yes. When she's asked who else this group performs castings for, she says she's not quite sure, but she feels like Brandon, maybe? She said that Lori had claimed Brandon was a dark spirit from the very beginning, but he also had an evil spirit in him now and became a high-level dark. And then they ask, who else were you told was dark? Melanie testifies, Charles, Brandon, her brother, not Alex, the other one, her dad, Tylee and Kay, Larry and JJ, those are the ones I can recall at this moment. Melanie testifies that it was sometime in 2019 when Lori started saying JJ was a dark spirit. Then the prosecution asks when Charles Vallow passed away. Melanie testifies July 11th, 2019, before saying that Lori said Charles and Tammy were supposed to pass away before this date. Melanie had actually stayed at Lori's house in Arizona during July of 2019, and after she left, she's asked if anyone else stayed. And she said Alex. And what day was Alex there? The day before Charles Vallow died. The prosecution asks Melanie if Lori ever told her how Charles died. And she said yes. Lori had told her that Charles had come into their house. He had JJ out in the car. They were getting in a fight. There was yelling and screaming going on when Tylee came out with a baseball bat to protect them. Then he had a heated conversation with Alex, who ended up grabbing a gun to protect the family, and he shot Charles. When asked if Lori ever indicated that she witnessed the shooting, Melanie testifies, I don't think so. She also testifies that Lori and Chad had kept in contact before Charles had passed away. She did this by keeping two cell phones. One cell phone was her regular cell phone, and the other she kept so that Charles would not realize she was texting Chad. And then the prosecution asks, did Lori tell you where they would meet up? Melanie says they would go places together like the temple. They'd also go out of town and meet up at hotels. Melanie is asked if Lori and Chad's spouses were still alive when they were meeting up in hotels. And Melanie testifies yes. Now the prosecution wants to know more about Lori's thoughts on JJ. They ask, did she have concerns about continuing to care for JJ? And Melanie says yes. These came on just before JJ was killed. Lori had told her that he was getting difficult to handle, and that made it hard for her to be with Chad. And she said she was going to ask JJ's grandma, Kay Woodcock, if she could watch him from now on. By August of 2019, Lori, Tylee, JJ, and Alex are moving to Rexburg, Idaho. Melanie is asked if she spoke on the phone with Lori following this move, and she says yes. She also indicates that she did hear Tylee in the background after they were moved into the apartments. But when she's asked if she ever saw Tylee again once they moved, she says no. However, she would see JJ one more time because Melanie Gibb travels to Idaho to stay with Lori in mid-September. During this trip, there was no sign of Tylee, but Lori indicates that Tylee was at college. She's attending BYU Hawaii. Melanie does not remember anyone speaking to Tylee during her trip. There were no phone calls made to Tylee. and Lori said she put all of Tylee's items into a storage unit. Melanie did see JJ alive and well during this trip. However, Lori was telling her that JJ definitely had an evil spirit in him. Lori said his behavior was becoming more difficult, while his speech was becoming more intelligent. She claimed JJ was saying things like, "I love Satan," and this was her way of trying to explain how he was negatively changing. This was not the first time Melanie had heard Lori talk about somebody changing once they were deemed dark. She did the same thing with Charles, saying that Charles was so different, although Melanie cannot recall all of the details. The prosecution asks if Melanie noticed any changes in JJ during this trip, and she said no. He appeared to be a typical 7-year-old autistic kid. She did not see him acting out. She did not see him dancing on counters. She did not witness him saying things like, "I love Satan." But during that trip in mid-September of 2019, Melanie did see JJ become upset one night, and then she saw Chad take him upstairs. This was the last time she ever saw JJ. Chad's head seemed to be red once he returned, and he said it was because JJ was scratching him. Melanie also testifies that she observed Chad and Lori being very affectionate together. Lori and him were kissing each other on the cheek, they were hugging each other. They even went and walked the track together at the BYUI campus. Chad was showing Melanie pictures in the hallway, explaining the campus, and they were very affectionate with each other. When they got back to their car, they shared a kiss before going their separate ways. So while they were maintaining this secret affair, they weren't being too quiet about it. The prosecution asks if Lori ever indicated that September 22nd had a special meaning. Melanie says yes. Lori had told her Roman appeared to her in the temple on this date. And again, the last time Melanie ever saw JJ was a Sunday night when he was being taken upstairs by Chad to Alex's bedroom. Melanie's husband, David, was also with her on this trip, and the couple leaves the following day on Monday, September 23rd. This was the only date that they did not see JJ through their trip. Now the prosecution moves on to ask Melanie if Lori ever talked with her about life insurance following Charles Vallow's death. Melanie testifies a little bit. She specifically remembers one time right after his death where she was standing in Lori's kitchen down in her house in Arizona. Melanie had asked why Charles would have wanted to kill Lori, and Lori said it's because she had $8 million of life insurance on her and he wanted it. But later on, Lori tells Melanie that Charles had changed this policy. And now, all the money from the life insurance was going to go to Kay if it was Charles that passed away. Lori is talking about this with Melanie the day after Charles had died. So the prosecution asks Melanie, "Did you ask Lori why she did not get a divorce?" And Melanie says Lori didn't want to because they would have been penalized for that. The prosecution then asks, what would they be penalized for? And Melanie says that Chad's standing with God would be penalized if Lori had divorced Charles. Now the prosecution asks if Melanie and Lori stayed in contact following that trip in mid-September. And Melanie says yes. At some point, Lori had even told her that she did ask Kay to take JJ. And Lori said Kay said yes. They met in Arizona and Lori sent JJ off. But we know that never happened. Now the prosecution asks if JJ had ever been with Melanie Gibb down in Arizona, and she says no. She testifies that the law enforcement did try to reach out to her, and the prosecution asks why she didn't answer right away. Melanie says she was not sure what to do. Lori had told her JJ's life was in danger and that Kay was after her. Lori also told Melanie that the cops were dark spirits and they were also after her. She also said that Kay and her brother Adam and her own father were all after her. Now, Melanie testifies that she did eventually speak with law enforcement. She said that she told them first she did have JJ at some point, but she did not have him anymore. She shared this with Officer Piller down in Arizona. And the prosecution asks, "Had you ever had JJ?" And Melanie says no. So they ask, why did you relay that to law enforcement at that time? And she says that she was not sure if Lori was telling the truth or not. She said she felt weird and she felt uncomfortable at that time. Eventually, she does make contact with law enforcement at a later date in the beginning of December or the end of November. And it's at that point, Melanie tells them JJ had never been with her. At this point, Lindsay Blake indicates to Judge Boyce that she's going to ask to admit evidence. This is a 20-minute phone call between Melanie and Lori. Lindsay's not sure if we should admit this evidence and hear it before we take a mid-morning break or after. Judge Boyce says that we should go ahead and admit it and hear it before taking a break. I'm going to play that recording for you here now. Melanie had called Chad Daybell's phone number to speak with Lori and Chad on December 8th at 3:43 p.m. She records this phone call.
Everybody, if they don't know anything, then they don't have to. Friends turned against me.
I'm not friends
of people that are against you.
Apparently you are.
I am not. I don't know Kay. I don't know who you're talking about. Your sister, I don't even know what her name or who she is. I don't know any of those people. Why would they contact me anyway? How would I even know about that?
Well, you're friends with Dave, and he's apparently, you know.
Well, David is a very righteous man, and I've always known that grounding about him. And he has a lot of beautiful experiences with the Lord, and these are not the same. You know, when you get the priesthood, as Peter, James, and John shows up, and then he confirms all of those in the circle that are to get it, and everybody's a witness of that. Everybody's a witness that the pattern is in the scriptures. There's no witness that you ever receive what you think you received. Nobody has seen that but you. There's no witness. The witness, Joseph Smith, Oliver Cowdery, Martin Harris, the eight witnesses, they all showed up.
Is there a witness that Jesus, Heavenly Father, gave that Joseph Smith by himself in the grove? Was there a witness?
No, but they had it later with other people. That was one experience, but others joined in later. When he brought other people into it, they had experiences.
Is that in the scriptures, yes or no?
I'm sorry?
Is that in the scriptures, yes or no?
That Joseph was alone when he saw God the Father and Jesus Christ?
Yes.
Yes, he was alone.
He was alone.
But he had to open it up first.
That's not a pattern at all.
Honey, what I'm saying is that after he saw that and other people joined in, they saw the things with him. He wasn't alone. There was a witness for them. There was no witness. Anybody's never seen what you've seen or experienced what you've seen. That is your own witness, but nobody said that.
No, God knows it, and I will never deny it. For my soul would be at stake if I did. So you can say it didn't happen to me now, but if I say it, then I am accountable. You didn't witness it.
Okay.
But I did.
But your behaviors is not okay.
Christ.
I understand that's what you, Lulan, you saw, but this is the thing, as I see, is that your behavior is not one of somebody
ever
in Christ. Your behavior. What?
Never had any idea that you would be the person of all people to turn me.
I'm asking questions, and I have concern for you. That is what somebody does when they care.
You don't sound like you're concerned. You sound like you're accusatory. You do not sound concerned. You sound pissed off.
I'm not. I am troubled. Maybe that's the better word. Troubled. Because these things, like you being with Chad before he's even divorced, is unusual behavior for a person that's
Jesus
Christ.
I was never with him, and he was never divorced.
Honey, I've seen this again. I've never seen you with Chad kiss him and walk around the track and be like you with him. I never saw that.
You see, you're the one that's just feeling guilty about being with someone before they were divorced.
Oh, honey, I think that's not what we're talking about here.
But it's not what we're talking about here. That's what I'm saying. You are going off the deep end.
Well, I'm just saying this is not the behavior of someone that sees Jesus Christ. It's not the behavior.
Really? So you know what the future behavior would be if you had seen Jesus Christ?
I know that when I pray,
each of you every day, and He does protect me, and He is protecting me, and He will protect me against this accusation as well. And we will both stand there with Him, and you tell me if I was lying or not. But we're both standing there with Jesus Christ.
Once the phone call concludes, Judge Boyce calls for a 20-minute mid-morning break. Melanie Gibb is back on the stand following the mid-morning break. Her questioning from prosecution will continue. She starts off by testifying that she recorded this phone call for two reasons. The first being that she was concerned for JJ and she was trying to find out his whereabouts. And the second being that she wanted a recording of Lori stating that Melanie did not ever have JJ. She goes on to testify about that trip her and her husband David took to Rexburg, Idaho in mid-September of 2019. Melanie says that during this trip, her and David were sleeping in separate rooms. She was normally in Tylee's room and David was normally in JJ's room, but Melanie says she would go back and forth, and on the last night she ever saw JJ, September 22nd, 2019, she was in JJ's room with David, and she says on that night, David wakes up with his heart racing. She says that he was really scared because of a bad dream he had. She said David was sweating and he was worried. So right after this, Melanie gets up and she goes to Lori's bedroom door and she's trying to knock on it. No one answered, so she tries to open it, but the bedroom door was locked. So she starts calling Lori and Chad. She's texting them as well. The reason Melanie is trying so hard to get in touch with Chad and Lori in the middle of the night is because she's wanting Chad to give her husband David a blessing to help him with this horrible dream he had just awoken from. Melanie testifies that neither Chad or Lori ever responded to any of these texts. It was the next morning, just after 8 a.m., that Melanie and David leave town, and they don't recall seeing JJ. Just 2 months later, Melanie gets that call in November, where Lori is asking her to say JJ is with her down in Arizona. It's the same month that she finds out JJ is not at his grandma Kay's. Prosecutor Lindsay Blake asks Melanie if Tammy turned dark just before her death. Melanie says yes, and then she's asked if she recalls when she learned of Tammy's passing. Melanie says she knows it was sometime in October, but she does not remember the exact date. She believes she learned of Tammy's death the day after Tammy died when she got a text message from a friend who saw a memo that Chad had left on Facebook. Melanie testifies that she did get a hold of Lori following Tammy's death, and Lori indicated that she did already know something because two other girls had already reached out to her that morning. So the prosecution asks if Lori ever mentioned anything specific about Tammy's death. And Melanie says that Lori had told her Tammy had turned into a dark entity, and they did what they had to do to get the spirit out of her. Now the prosecution asks if Lori ever indicated that Tammy knew something about the affair. And Melanie testifies that Lori did say Tammy was suspicious. So the prosecution asks if Lori knew how. And Melanie says she recalls having a conversation with Lori about how Charles and Tammy knew each other somehow. Charles had maybe gotten a hold of Tammy over the phone. Melanie also testifies that another girl, Christina, might have known something wrong was going on earlier, and she had reached out to Tammy herself. But Melanie also says she doesn't really know, and that's all the information she has. So she's asked how long Lori indicated Tammy was suspicious of that before she passed away. Melanie says, I would say no longer than 2 weeks. Melanie also testifies that Lori had been becoming frustrated because Tammy had not passed away by the time Lori moved to Rexburg, Idaho. She said that she continued to have revelations that Tammy would die soon, and Chad was having these same revelations. The two of them had been told by God that Tammy was supposed to get in a car crash and die, but that never happened. So now Lori is frustrated because she's living in Idaho while Chad is still married to Tammy. All of a sudden, a phone goes off in the courtroom. Judge Boyce is annoyed and he says, apologies, we're going to pause proceedings for a moment because there is a phone going off. So we are going to have the marshal take that. For some reason, unsilenced cell phones have continued to be a distraction through this trial. Once the phone is confiscated and questioning is back underway, Lindsay Blake asks if Lori ever expressed any feelings following Tammy's death. Melanie pauses for a moment before saying, sorry, my mind is drifting a little. And then she answers, saying yes, Lori was excited about getting married. Lori had a cheerful demeanor, and this was similar to how she acted after her husband, Charles Vallow, had died. Now Melanie is asked about vibrations, and she says that Lori did talk with her about this, the higher vibrations you had, the higher you were on a spiritual level. Melanie says, for example, if you were at 1,000 vibrations, then you were on a higher level, the level that they would call the terrestrial level. As your vibrations would increase, you would become closer to becoming a translated being, where your body would change. So the prosecution asks if Melanie can recall who taught her about this, and she testifies it was Lori. And she's asked what changes the body would go through when you're becoming a translated being. Melanie says that Lori claimed she sometimes wouldn't need to eat, and she would look younger, and maybe her menstrual cycle would change. So the prosecution asks if she would say these physical changes would take your body beyond the mortal body you're given. And Melanie testifies, yes. Melanie testifies that Alex Cox, Lori's brother, was also taught these spiritual lessons. And Melanie had talked with him about it. She says that he learned of the teachings more gradually towards the end of her friendship with Chad and Lori. And she says that Alex really believed the people they wanted to pass away were zombies. So the prosecution says, when you say they, who do you mean? And Melanie replies, Charles, Tammy, Tylee, and JJ. And the prosecution says, who was hoping that they would pass away? Melanie testifies, Lori and Chad. Now Lindsay Blake wants to know why Alex wasn't originally taught these things. And Melanie says that it's because he would just pop in and out of Lori's house. He wasn't really around, so it was not disclosed to him in the beginning. But eventually, he was taught these things, and he 100% believed that people would become zombies. Melanie had even told him once that she didn't believe this 100%, and Alex indicated to her that it was absolutely true. As people became more suspicious about JJ's whereabouts, Melanie says she did ask Alex if she wanted to know what happened to JJ. And Alex told Melanie, you don't want to know. So the prosecution asks, when you visited Lori in September, is that when she told you that JJ was a zombie? Melanie testifies yes, and she says that Alex Cox was there. The prosecution has no further questions. And now it's time for John Thomas to stand and conduct a cross-examination. John starts off by asking Melanie if she's met with the prosecution before. He wants to know how often, if they went over their testimony, and Melanie said she had gone over her testimony during Zoom meetings with prosecuting attorney Lindsay Blake. After some more questioning around this subject and some back and forth between John and Melanie, he says that he knows what the court is probably going to do on this, but he's going to ask that this witness's testimony be struck from the record based on Idaho Rule 16b6. Lindsay Blake jumps in and says, Your Honor, I would ask for a sidebar. And he says, okay. So now the lawyers go to meet in private. Upon their return, Judge Boyce says that he has determined this issue would be more appropriate to be argued outside of the presence of the jury, so he instructs the jury to be escorted out of the room. He lets the defense argue first. John Thomas says that in this rule, it indicates that the prosecution must turn over all statements made by witnesses. And he says that Melanie just testified to things that they did not present to the defense in the Zoom meetings that she had with Lindsay. Now Lindsay Blake stands for the prosecution, and she's argued that they've already litigated something like this before. She says that the defense is trying to interpret this rule differently than it is intended. She says that they don't need to turn over statements that are irrelevant, such as hi, goodbye. She says that the prosecution and the defense are allowed to meet with witnesses and do witness prep, and that they are required to turn over information and statements made, but the prosecution has turned over all statements to the defense. The only thing they would have needed to turn over was any new information or new statements made. But that didn't happen, and she says the defense is trying to broaden this rule. Judge Boyce takes a minute before saying that the court has reviewed this rule and their authority. He says his main concern is with the timeliness of this objection, and he asks John if he's asking him to tell the jury to strike the entire testimony of the witness that has already been said. John says yes, he argued this a couple days ago with a different witness, but he was shot down by the court, so he thought that the only time that would be appropriate for him to try this again would be on cross-examination. Judge Boyce says that in the future he will likely rule the same on this subject, but that if John does want to try again, it would be best to do so before the witness testifies. With that, he denies the defense's motion based on State versus Montgomery, Idaho 140. Now John continues his cross-examination. He asks Melanie where it was specifically she met Lori back in 2018. Melanie says it was at a church building where she was teaching a regular class with her LDS church ward. And John says, so it was like a Sunday school thing. And Melanie says no, it was a Saturday or maybe it was a Thursday, something like a Relief Society night. And he asks if Lori was in Melanie's ward. Melanie says no, she had come with her niece Melanie Pelosky, back then known as Melanie Boudreaux. And John asks if Melanie P. was in her ward, but she says no. Now John moves on to ask about the light and dark scale. Melanie testifies that Chad and Lori indicated people could change between being light and dark, but she says she never 100% believed it all, although she did wonder if it could be true. So John asks, but you were involved in the casting out of dark spirits, right? And Melanie says, that is correct. So John says, you believe it somewhat then. And Melanie said, like I said, I somewhat believed it. I don't think they believed it at first either, because they didn't even know what they were trying to accomplish. Now John wants to talk about zombies, asking, when Lori talked about zombies, did you immediately think they were going to die? Melanie says no. In fact, she thought it was a very bizarre teaching. She even says that Lori thought it was a bizarre teaching at first too. Eventually, though, Lori talked more and more about zombies, even indicating that her own daughter, Tylee Ryan, was a zombie. They knew this by the time she was 16 years old, but Lori tells Melanie that Tylee had been a zombie since the time she was 12 or 13 years old. And she says this is what Chad told her. Once John finishes his line of questioning surrounding the talk of zombies, Judge Boyce calls for a lunch break around 12:45 p.m. Following this lunch break, Melanie Gibb is back on the stand and John Thomas continues to cross-examine her. Melanie is asked if she had a good relationship with Tylee Ryan, but Melanie says no. In fact, Tylee didn't like her right from the start. Melanie claims she's always kind to everyone, so she's not sure why Tylee did not like her. Now the defense asks Melanie if Kay was getting the life insurance from Charles's death anyway, there wouldn't be any financial incentive for Lori, correct? But Melanie says she does not know. Now the defense asks Melanie what she knows about dark portals. Melanie says that Chad and Lori did tell her they were able to make portals. Chad had one somewhere in his room, maybe on his bed, and Lori had a portal in her closet. Chad and Lori indicated to Melanie that they were able to communicate through their portals. You could not physically see the portals, but it was a spiritual thing. When John asks Melanie if she had a portal, she says, oh, no. John starts asking Melanie about a bunch of different characters from the Book of Mormon and the Bible. He asks her who Joseph Smith is, he asks her who Alma is, and he asks her who Corior is. And she says he's an antichrist in the Book of Mormon. Melanie even says that Lori had become an antichrist. The defense wants to hammer it into the jury that Lori was in Hawaii when Tammy Daybell died. You'll hear them ask questions relating to this often. So of course, they ask Melanie if she has any reason to believe Lori Daybell was not in Hawaii when Tammy died. Melanie says she has no reason to believe otherwise. Now John Thomas's questioning comes back around to Alex Cox. Melanie tells him that Alex told her police came and they took all of his guns. He said the police were very evil people. And he also said the police had visited Melanie P's house and they took all her money. Melanie also testified about a patriarchal blessing that Chad had given Alex. She said Alex was very emotional about this blessing and felt honored to have it. It was something special. John asks Melanie if Alex ever told her where the kids were, but Melanie says no. She later talked to Zulema, who said that Alex told her the kids could not be found. The defense has no further questions. But it's not quite time for Melanie Gibb to conclude her questioning. Lindsay Blake stands for the prosecution, and she wants to ask some follow-up questions. Lindsay Blake asks Melanie if Tylee's behavior was extreme, or if she was just an average moody teenager. Melanie says that Lori was a pretty good mom to Tylee, but she wanted to be friends with her. Melanie goes on to testify that she really did want to believe the things that Lori had taught her. She said that Lori is very convincing, but by the time she made that phone call where she recorded Chad and Lori, Melanie testifies that she no longer believed their teachings. By that time, Melanie had come to think that Lori was using these teachings for her own personal gain. Now the prosecution wants to know if Melanie observed any patterns once someone became a zombie. And Melanie says yes. It always seemed to be the people that Lori and Chad didn't like that would become dark or become a zombie. According to Melanie, she said that Tylee, JJ, and Charles were zombies, but Tammy was possessed. Lindsay goes on to ask Melanie what the prosecutors asked for her as they did their witness prep. Melanie says all they wanted was for her to tell the truth. And Blake responds with, "Is that what you have done today?" Melanie says yes. And with that, the prosecution has no further questions. Now Melanie Gibb's testimony has come to an end. She's able to be led off the witness stand. Next, the state calls Detective Nathan Duncan. He is with the Chandler Police Department down in Arizona. He's been with them since June of 2000, and he works in the robbery/homicide unit. Detective Duncan testifies that he was working on July 11th, 2019, when Alex Cox called that morning saying he had shot his brother-in-law. Duncan was a part of the team that responded to the report of this shooting on Four Peaks Place in Chandler, Arizona. At this point, the prosecution has the computer-aided dispatch notes admitted into evidence. Duncan looks over these notes and shows that the call came in at 8:36 a.m. Officers were dispatched by 8:37 a.m. Just minutes into Duncan's testimony, the defense attorneys stand and ask Judge Boyce for a sidebar. Following this, the judge says there's a legal issue that has come up, a technical issue, and he needs to call for a recess. Following the recess, the prosecution asks to admit evidence from Lori's iCloud account, and then they get back to their questioning. They continue asking about the shooting of Charles Vallow. Detective Duncan testifies that he was not the first lead investigator put on this case. Originally, it was Detective Nathan Moffitt, but when he was promoted in June of 2020, Detective Duncan takes over. When Detective Duncan arrived on the scene, he did notice something weird. He said there was no furniture in the living room at all, but there were mirrors all across the walls. By the time Duncan came across the victim, Charles Vallow, he already had his shirt cut away with medical equipment on his chest, confirming that he had died. He said Charles was on the west side of the living room, laying on his back. Detective Duncan could clearly see a gunshot wound to the left side of Charles's abdomen. He testifies that there was almost no blood. He had never responded to another shooting death with no blood spatter. Another weird thing Detective Duncan noticed was a bullet laying next to Charles's left shoulder. It sounds like Duncan didn't really believe that Alex had given Charles CPR like he claimed, because normally when someone is given CPR following a gunshot wound, there is blood everywhere because of the compressions on the chest. Police did find blood on a faucet inside the house, and it was also determined that Charles had abrasions to his knees. Detective Duncan testifies that they were able to determine the second shot that Charles received would have been done while he was laying on the ground, and they were able to determine this based on the entry and exit wounds on Charles's body. The police rule Charles's death as a homicide, which Detective Duncan testifies they're able to do even if the incident is self-defense. At the Chandler Police Department, an extraction of Charles's phone was done. Detective Duncan remembers looking through this phone, seeing the iCloud and the Gmail accounts connected to it. Police had to collect Charles's phone from Lori Vallow. She said that this phone was the reason for the fight that morning, what led up to Charles's death. And following his shooting, she took his phone with her in Charles's rental car to take JJ to school. At this point, the prosecution asks to admit evidence that they have put together on a PowerPoint presentation to show what was found on Charles's phone. But the defense makes an objection to this evidence being admitted, claiming that this PowerPoint was just made this week and he can't be sure what is on it. The prosecution says that the messages presented in the PowerPoint have been available to the defense. Judge Boyce decides to call for a mid-afternoon break so that he can review this objection. When the afternoon recess concludes, the prosecution says they will continue questioning Duncan on other issues, and they will give the defense the night to review the PowerPoint. Now Lindsay Blake asks Detective Duncan about a call that was placed to a mortuary. He testifies that the FBI had asked him to contact the Valley of the Sun Mortuary in Chandler, Arizona. Duncan was able to retrieve a phone call that was placed from Chad Daybell to this mortuary. The prosecution asks that this phone call be admitted as evidence, and it is played for the jury. Detective Duncan testifies that they were able to confirm the phone number that called did belong to Chad Daybell, and the phone call was placed the evening after Charles had died.
Hello, my name is Sarah. I'm just picking up their call. How can I help you tonight?
We just had a death in the family, and we really don't want anything but a cremation, and then to send the cremains to family in Louisiana. It's a simple no, nothing other than a cremation and sending him to his family for a service in Louisiana. So is there any way to know a ballpark price on that?
Let me transfer you over to the director who can assist you with the pricing. What is your name, please?
now?
I need to spell that name.
D-A-B-A-L, Abel.
How are you related to the person
of Bell? I'm his nephew.
And then also, this is for the Valley of the Sons in Chandler, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he lives there in Chandler. I live in Iowa, so I'm just trying to help out.
Okay, thank you. Yes, what is your uncle's name for reference, please?
He is John Abel.
His last name?
Well, D-A-D-A-L. The same. John.
Does he have a middle name?
Myron.
M-Y-R-O-N?
Yes.
Thank you. Is he in a nursing home hospital or is it?
He passed away in a hospital. I don't know the details.
Yeah, it's just for, to know, because sometimes it's different if it's a residential or hospital or a nursing home.
I think he may have been in the medical examiner, I'm not sure. I should have had more information before I called, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. The information, which city?
New Orleans.
My name is Chris. I'm a funeral director with Valley of the Sun Mushroom Cemetery. I understand that your uncle passed away.
Yes, and I'm just starting the process for the family. He didn't have many relatives. I'm his nephew. I live in Iowa.
Now Detective Duncan testifies about that patriarchal blessing that Melanie Gibb had mentioned in her testimony. This patriarchal blessing was given from Chad Daybell to Alex Cox, and Detective Duncan was able to find an audio recording of this blessing and a Word document on Lori's iCloud account, Lori4Style. While it is common for a member in the LDS Church to receive a patriarchal blessing once in their lifetime, this is usually given by a worthy member of the church. However, Chad was not a stake patriarch. Prosecuting attorney Lindsay Blake asks to have this audio admitted as evidence. It's 15 minutes long, and it is played for the jury.
Chad Daybell, it is November 24th, 2019, Sunday afternoon, 5:15 p.m. We are going to give Alex Lamar Cox a patriarchal blessing. Alexander Lamar Cox, on this special day, I lay my hands upon your head to give you a patriarchal blessing as part of a member of the Church of the Firstborn that you have earned the privilege to be a member of. I do so by the power of the Melchizedek priesthood which I hold, and in the name of Jesus Christ, our Savior, who has authorized this blessing. I am grateful that you are receiving it as you move forward in your life, protecting and preserving those who seek to learn the truth, and that has been your mission on this earth, and Alex, stand into ways blessing. I want to begin by opening up the portals of time and going back to your previous creations on which you've led. I see you on the third creation as a valiant warrior fighting for truth and righteousness, always seeking to do what is right. Then you progressed and were selected by the Savior himself to be part of the fourth creation. Great warriors were needed in that creation. Powerful goddesses were needed to be protected, and you were selected to help protect your sister, and you helped her in numerous probations as a defender. You have a special bond even from the pre-mortal world. You connected there, and as she grew in power, you were right there beside her, always. With a humble heart, we both always were so humble. So as the fifth creation began, after you had been exalted in the fourth creation, when you could have gone on to exaltation of Holy, resurrected being, you accepted the Savior's invitation one more time to come to this little realm, to condescend as a God. Help us. You have already assisted us in ways that can never be repaid. But you will continue to do so as you move forward in this life. You were born into a family that needed you desperately, with a set of parents who spoke of the gospel with their mouths, yet did not live it. And once again, you were reunited with a sister who needed you to survive such an environment. In no way was it a reflection on either one of you that you lived in that home. You were put there to help each other persevere. But the lessons you had to learn in your youth have now made you both strong, powerful servants of the Lord that would not have occurred in a traditional LDS home. You had to go to great depths to achieve tremendous heights. And the fruits of those trials are beginning to demonstrated. You were granted to be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and it was a strength to you. You learned about your Savior, and grew closer to him, and rekindled in some ways the connections you've always had with him. And through adulthood, you have refined yourself. And I just want you to know that at this time the Savior is saying it to me, well done. Thy soul is cleansed. All is well. And now you'll begin into your terrestrial phase of this existence, and you'll be a powerful servant. Bless you with that knowledge that you now move forward as a true warrior in ways that can be demonstrated through not only physical action but through spiritual power that is coming to you and will be bestowed upon you. I bless you with the knowledge that marriage, you'll be united with a partner who will match your powers and complement your strengths. You'll be known throughout the world for souls all over the world through portals, and you'll begin to gather the souls that come unto Christ. I see you in New Jerusalem, but more importantly, I see you as a messenger of the Lord. Surrounding New Jerusalem will be many small communities where people will come who aren't quite ready to enter those. Missions will be to go among the people and testify as a prophet. That day you make it, you'll share your own experiences of overcoming adversity. And through your example, they will rise up. You will give tremendous blessings to them, raise their vibrations, and be like a brother to many of these fathers who may have had doubts, but through your strength, they will look to you as a hero, and you'll bring entire families that have been sanctified to the gates of New Jerusalem, and they will be allowed in. On your word. For me, it's one of the many wonderful experiences you have. I see you doing that often, but then, based on assignments, you might go further into the world. Always serving, always a missionary. With your companion, you'll communicate with Mother Earth herself. You will know where to be before natural disasters happen. You can be on location to protect key leaders, church leaders, and to preserve who should survive. Little children, as you gather little children in your arms. Saving them from flood waters. Just having a collage of moments that await you in this life, rescuing the pure and innocent, bringing them to safety. Dozens of instances. Joy to help Mother Earth transfer to a terrestrial realm. Lord's translation and transfiguration, that the Lord will be with you at all times. You will be a patriarch in your own home. You will give blessings similar to this. Your veil will be essentially gone. You will be able to see into the past and into the future for these individuals and share with them the same type of knowledge and truth.
Following the audio being played, Lindsay Blake just has one follow-up question before court is adjourned for the day. She asks Detective Duncan if there was a timestamp of when the recording was made. He testifies that it was on November 24th, 2019. This means it was given just a couple weeks before Alex Cox died. Court concludes for the day. Detective Duncan will still be on the stand the following morning. In the next episode, we'll jump back into Detective Duncan's testimony. He goes over a lot of text messages revealed between Lori and Chad, Lori and Charles, and many other people. Following his testimony, the state will call Zulema Pastinas, Alex Cox's widow. This podcast was produced by True Crime Exposed and is hosted by me, Kayla Waters. Please leave us a 5-star written review as we are a new podcast and help spread the word.